Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Public education in Massachusetts is undergoing big changes. School committees and superintendents across the state are spending the summer debating whether to continue MCAS testing next year or instead have all students take PARC exams, which test the National Common Core standards.
No matter which choice schools make, many teachers are angry and frustrated about the heavy focus on testing. They're also pushing back against new approaches to evaluating teacher performance. And whether to lift the cap on charter school enrollment in Massachusetts remains a fiery debate.
Barbara Mattaloni tapped into those feelings when she ran for and won the presidency of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. She's an active opponent of standardized testing, and she wants to lead a grassroots effort that would give teachers a stronger voice.
Mattaloni is a former high school English teacher and a former teacher educator at UMass, and she's with us now in the studio to talk about teaching, about testing, and about her vision for the future of Massachusetts classrooms. Barbara Mattaloni, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
And listeners, we are opening up the phones. We want to hear from you. This is your chance to talk to and ask questions to the new president of the Mass Teachers Association. Let us know what you think should change. As you listen to Barbara's views about standardized testing and teacher evaluations, let us know what you think. Your chance to ask questions, talk to her. We are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Barbara, would you first tell us a little about your background? Because I understand that you came to teaching rather late, in your 40s. You had been a clinical psychologist. How did the switch happen?
I have my degree in psychology from the University of Denver, and I practiced as a psychotherapist for 15 years, working primarily with adolescents and women. And at some point in the late 1990s, I came to understand that two things were happening. One was that a lot of the people who were coming into my office, even though were coming in individually, were dealing with issues that were created by the broader social context. And I puzzled about what that meant and what I should do about it. And I thought, well, I need to address those larger social issues, have to think about who I'm going to be in the world to address those issues. At the same time, within the political context, I was anxious about the state of our democracy. I was feeling that the possibilities of our democratic engagement were getting fewer and fewer. So as I put that together over a number of years, thinking about who I was and what I wanted to do to enter the world, I came to understand that public education is the space where we grow our democracy. And I should become a public school teacher. And in particular, I became an English teacher because I had been actually a comp lit major back in the day. And I felt like through texts and discovering ourselves and each other within the context of reading is a critical place to begin to know our voices, to develop empathy and community and those sort of essential qualities to a democratic community.
Did you like teaching?
Oh, my God, I love teaching. When I was an undergraduate, my mentor at the time told me I should become a teacher. And I rejected her suggestion at the time.
Really?
I said, I want to be a psychologist. That's what I want to do. And I went off to do that. So she now gets to say that she was right. And she told me so. Teaching is an incredibly challenging, joyful, intellectually, emotionally, physically engaging work. And I got to use so many parts of myself. And then be a part of watching young people come to know themselves and each other and know their voices as an English teacher, help them discover their voices.
Did you see things in the teaching world when you were a classroom teacher that made you, that you felt need to be changed and that led you to become involved with teaching unions?
Well, I came into teaching just as the corporate reform movement was really hitting Massachusetts when the MCAS became a requirement for 10th grade students, and I was a 10th grade English teacher. So immediately the kinds of hopes and possibilities that I brought to the classroom were being shaped by high-stakes testing and standardization around that high-stakes testing.
Your hopes and possibilities were being shaped in the sense that you didn't have the freedom you wanted because you were constricted by teaching to an exam?
constricted by teaching to an exam, and this was 14 years ago, before things were as bad as they are now, but that the sort of the purpose of education, the reason I entered the classroom was I could feel it being eroded by this idea that the purpose would be to pass a test and to get a good score, rather than the purpose be the things that I just talked about, to come to know oneself and the world and each other and develop voice.
And this testing issue has become enormous for you. You are very against standardized testing. In fact, you've even proposed that there be a 3-year moratorium on standardized testing. What is it about them that you think is so problematic?
Well, I think it's what I'm just speaking to here, which is that it narrows our idea of the purpose of public education. So we have public education in this country ostensibly because it is a place to grow our democracy, which means it's a place where we come to appreciate diversity, where we learn how to think critically, where we learn how to be with people from a variety of perspectives, and we engage the whole child to enter the world as sort of the best adult they can be. That's our ideal, that I understand it. Testing doesn't speak to any of that. Testing narrows our focus, and in narrowing our focus, narrows our curriculum, narrows our understanding of who we are and who we can be, and does that very specifically to the students in our schools who are then experience themselves as only about a test score. And we see that in places like Holyoke, Massachusetts, where the teachers were being required to put data walls up in their classroom, which would have some sort of identifying information about students and then track their test scores in this very public way so that the student experiences herself as a test score, as a number, and not as a full human being entering the world, doing some things well, doing some things not so well, figuring it out like we all try to do.
But there does need to be some way to measure student progress, aptitude, knowledge being gained. If not by a standardized test, how do we do that?
We've been doing that for decades. That's what teachers do. Teachers assess every day. A critical piece of being a teacher is that you're paying attention every day to each one of your students to know, what are they doing well? Where are their challenges? Who are they as a human being? What did they bring into the classroom that they're struggling with? How do they get along with each other? If you go into a classroom and you ask a teacher, and you have a classroom of 30 students, and you say, tell me about Sasha. What's going on with her? That teacher's going to be able to tell you how that child is doing and how well they've progressed. And so what we need is more opportunities for teachers to do that work well and not be distracted by preparing for some external measure that takes the tiniest piece of that and says, this is who we are and this is who the child is.
And that certainly is true, that there are many teachers that have in their minds a very good sense of how each student is doing and progressing. But then how do we take that knowledge the teachers have and have them somehow give it to their superintendents and administrators so that an objective third party can gauge the success of that teacher, the abilities of that teacher, and whether the school overall is doing well? So again, back to the issue of how do we measure student progress on a school-wide scale?
Ideally, what we do is, first of all, one of the serious problems with public education for a century now has been that we've been trying to do scale instead of do human beings.
And mass testing.
And we need to do human beings. And teaching and learning is work that takes place within community and within relationships. So there are all kinds of possibilities out there for a community to come to understand how well their students are doing and what they're doing in a school through some sort of authentic performances, through displays, through bringing the community in, the parents in the community, to hear from the students and the teachers together what we've been doing. That's a meaningful assessment.
Barbara, there are many teachers, many people who vehemently agree with you. They love hearing you say this. But as you know, there are also many people who disagree. You know, they feel that public school systems are often failing students, especially lower income students, and they feel that schools need to be held accountable. Do you feel like schools are being held accountable right now for their failures?
I'm not even sure where to go with that question, because I think the first thing we have to understand is that the failure of public schools is in part a media campaign. if we set things up so that the way that we know we determine the supposed success of a school is through a standardized test, and we know, one thing we know for certain is that the best thing that standardized testing predicts is the socioeconomic status of the family that those students live in, then we've prepared the ground to say that schools are failing, because we're using a measure which isn't measuring what's really happening in the school. We're measuring socioeconomic status. So that's the important point, is that partly it's a media campaign. Now, yes,
but more than that, certainly, because there are school systems in Massachusetts where half the kids don't even graduate from high school. That seems like an objective measure of failure.
And that's where I was going to go with that, is that I think that there are real issues that schools face when young people are coming into the school from extreme poverty, when they're coming into the school when they have very little hope because they're smart and they're thoughtful and they're figuring the world out, of their lives amounting to much, of being much, because we're not offering young people than that. Those create very difficult conditions that we have to together figure out how we're going to address those conditions. Testing doesn't help us address the real human conditions that people are facing in ways that we can grow the relationships and the knowledge and share that knowledge to build the communities that these students need.
I'm talking with Barbara Mattaloni, the new president of the Massachusetts Teachers Association. And Barbara, we have a full board of callers interested in speaking to you. So I want to get to as many of those as I can. And again, we are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK here on Radio Boston. If you'd like to talk to Barbara Mattaloni or put a question to her, if you object to what you've heard, if you agree with what she says, call us. Let us know what you think. 1-800-423-8255. And we have John calling from Melrose. John, thanks for the call. And what are your thoughts for Barbara Mattaloni?
My thoughts on this is, for Barbara, is that I have a kid in high school, and I remember the resistance Massachusetts had to the MCAS, and it seemed to have worked fairly well. And now I hear this huge resistance to the Common Core. And I grew up in Europe. I grew up in Ireland, where all schools were pretty much equal. We didn't have this fanciful community. Some communities were better than others, but with regards to education, they were equal. They were equally funded. The schools were equal to each other. And over here you have this fanciful way of having nice communities where everybody's supposed to do well, and other communities where people, well, maybe not doing so well. And I think Common Core, and I haven't studied it, but I think it might give those disadvantaged children a chance.
So I think you point out something that's absolutely essential that we don't talk about enough, John, and that is that we have students in this country who are having amazing experiences in public schools. They're well-resourced. The teachers have time and respect and autonomy to make the choices that they know are the best choices for their students. The students enter the school coming from homes where there's a sense of security and there's a reality of economic security. They're well cared for. And then they have a full and rich curriculum. And then we have schools where the buildings are falling down, where the students haven't slept any in the same bed for 3 nights in a row because they're homeless, and where the teachers are being pressured to give sometimes up to 30 days of testing and pretesting and retesting the pretest, so that these students are having really disparate kinds of experiences. I don't think the answer to that is the same sort of standard curriculum. The answer to that is rich and deep funding for both schools. We need to fund all of our schools so that every child can have the kinds of resources our children in our best public schools have. And then we also really need to address the economic inequities that are having students come into our schools really desperate and fragile from the conditions of their lives.
We have another caller. This is David from Holden. And David, your thoughts for Barbara Mattaloni, the new president of the Mass Teachers Association.
Yes. Actually, I'm 58 years old. If I had been going to high school here in Massachusetts, I never would have graduated. I had a terrible time with math. Never even made it through Algebra 1 in high school. No way I would have been able to pass the MCAS despite all the tutoring I got. Nevertheless, I ended up in college and did well as a psychologist, as a matter of fact. Made the jump to IT and had a very, and I've had a very successful 30-year career in IT, including 13 years with IBM. The standard testing, in my opinion, is just doesn't make the difference in what doesn't track really what students are capable of doing.
Thank you, David. I appreciate that story in part because one of the things that I think about, and I was actually just speaking with a colleague about this before I came in, how different my educational experience was compared to that our students are getting now, and the kinds of freedoms and possibilities I had as a high school student to voice my opinion, to explore issues that were essential to me and that I was curious about, to make mistakes, to not do well in history in my junior year because I was struggling, and to still go on and be able to go to college and get my doctorate. There's this way that we standardize our idea of who children should be at any moment in time that is just not true to our experience. It's not true to the experience that parents have of their children. Parents know that their child is unique, that their child has good days and bad days and grows incredibly fast at one moment and then seems to sort of plateau in this difficult space. Parents know that. Teachers know that. We know that, and we need to reclaim a conversation so that that understanding of our children is the center of our work.
Barbara, we also have a caller who wants to raise the issue of the quality of teachers, and this is Jane calling from Easton. And Jane, your question for Barbara Mattaloni, the new president of the Mass Teachers Association.
Yes, I agree with most everything that you're saying. However, my question is, what do you propose we do to ensure that we are getting the best and the brightest of teachers into our classrooms? I think that can really help support all of the things that you're talking about. And I think in so many cases, there is a huge variation in terms of training and what qualities teachers come into the classroom with.
Well, I'll start with this, Jane. I spent the last year as part of my campaign traveling across Massachusetts and speaking with education workers across the state. And one of the things that really was most moving to me was the incredible intelligence and commitment, thoughtfulness of our educators. So I really think we need to start there. We have some amazing people in our classrooms. And people come into this field because they have a commitment to our future. They love their discipline. They're interested in who children are and how they're going to grow into the world. And that's their commitment. The question then is, how do we keep those people in the classroom? How do we make the classroom and the school a space that's going to nourish them and help them be their best selves? And I think that's about, first of all, trust. I think it's about autonomy. And it's about developing communities where professionals can speak to each other as professionals and grow and develop their work. But the core of that is going to be trust. And you know, parents trust their teachers. Polls show. So let's build from that trust that we already know that people have in teachers.
We've been talking with Barbara Mattaloni, the new president of the Mass Teachers Association. She's a former high school English teacher herself, former teacher educator. She just began a 2-year term as president of the MTA. Barbara, thank you so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
Stay with us. Coming up, Boston gets a pop-up library on the Rose Kennedy Greenway. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.